thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well,
here's John Williams.
We are really going to bite off a lot today. It's 110. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, looking at a beautiful sunswept sidewalk, blue skies. Nice day downtown Chicago. I hope it's good where you are, too. Thanks for listening, and join us on the phone. You can text us, too, 312-981-7200, as in 720 WGN. This is John Williams. Two sets of brackets that should or might have your attention today. One is the NC2A brackets that everybody's talking about. Four games are underway. We'll keep you posted on the game scores throughout this show, including the Loyola score. I'll give you a warning if you're taping it and don't want to know, but I think you can keep abreast of it anyway, so we'll do the same here. We will keep you posted on the game scores and let you know how things are going, particularly if there's some upsets brewing, and I don't see any that are about to upset anybody's brackets greatly. Also on my Facebook page, I'm WGN King John on Facebook. The new post on the top of my page is brackets. We have the East Regional now of the Cuckoo Trump brackets. We asked you, after 6 months of Donald Trump's presidency, to score for us what you thought was the head-slapping, I-can't-believe-it moment. Now, you determined that it was his speech to the Boy Scouts. Do you remember that? There were 15 other teams in that tournament, and the Boy Scout speech was the craziest thing he did in his first 6 months in office. We are now 8 more months into office, and we're at the March Madness, so we thought it was a good time to throw up round 2. You've got everything from the Mooch to Pocahontas to taking a knee during the national anthem at NFL games, what he said about Chuck Todd, what he calls Senator Warren, and the list goes on. There are 16. Wow, that all happened. Moments. We're asking you to fill in those brackets and send them back to us. We'll see who wins this tournament. We've got our own Trump brackets up, and you've got your other ones. We'll keep you posted on all of them. Incidentally, speaking of voting these days, on November 6th, you will be able to vote on the following question on the ballot. This will be on the ballot. Do you support the legislation of possession and use of marijuana by persons who are at least 21 years of age, subject to regulation and taxation that is similar to the regulation and taxation of tobacco and alcohol? They're going to ask you if you want to legalize recreational marijuana on the November ballot. You'll have to be 21, and we'll tax it the way we do tobacco and alcohol. Who's coming with us?
But it doesn't count.
It's a referendum. It's non-binding.
Well, people were going to vote for it, but
They got high. No, they got high and then they voted for it. Listen,
no, that's a song.
I am one of these people who have been very liberal about this thing. Here's my problem. I just don't think we need to be putting people in jail or ruining their chance to get a job or whatever for smoking marijuana. I drink alcohol, and I don't think that's any more virtuous or less injurious than you're using marijuana. The laws don't reflect that, but I think we have an opportunity to do it as they're doing in other states. The closer we get to this, the less confident I feel in my views. The closer we get to actually doing what I just said, now I'm like, oh, well.
Then you backtrack a little, like, wait, am I really supporting this?
You weren't listening to me when I said that, right? That was just me talking.
John, isn't that the case for you in almost everything?
It so is, yes. I can really talk good, but if you actually put my feet to the fire, I'm not sure I love the stuff I just laid on you.
Wait, we're really going to go there?
He's having a moment of clarity. So here's why I bring it up. There's this guy named Ed Shemalaya. A medical group is bringing him into town. He is the coordinator of the National Marijuana Initiative. He'll be in our studio at 2 o'clock, and he doesn't think we should have recreational marijuana at all. We've got a candidate. Let's just play that commercial. Elif, I know this is getting ahead of ourselves, but listen to this commercial. It's from one of the candidates who's running for office, and there's a lot of problems with this commercial, but here's the meat of 20 seconds of a commercial that you may have already heard.
My name's Benjamin Thomas Wolf, and I'm a candidate for the United States Congress. I'm a former FBI National Security Investigator, a career State Department diplomat with service in Iraq and Africa, and a professor here in Chicago. I want things like universal health care, legalize cannabis, and free education. Remember to vote on March 20th. Vote Wolf.
Vote Wolf. By the way, it's quite possible that the only true thing in that commercial is that he wants to legalize cannabis. His candidacy has been called into question for a number of reasons, but he's getting some attention because he's smoking a reefer while he's actually doing the commercial, and he's right out front saying, I'm very progressive. Let's legalize marijuana. I don't think you have to be super progressive to have that view. We'll talk about that with an expert after 2 o'clock. Chris Kennedy will join us in 20 minutes. We're going to play J.B. Pritzker's ads for him, where they accuse him of all sorts of things, including raising tuition 5 times at the University of Illinois and being a Mike Madigan flunky. Or a Bruce Brown or Toady. I forget which one he is. But whatever it is, it's not good for Illinois. Darlene Glanton in today's Chicago Tribune has an article you have to read. I recommended it in the Mincing Rascals podcast, which we recorded just about 2 hours and 20. We recorded it about 11:20, 2 hours ago.
Do the math yourself.
And Darlene Glanton's column in the Tribune today reminds you that J.B. Pritzker is spending $188,000 every day on his campaign. J.B. Pritzker is averaging $188,000 of his own money on his campaign for governor. J.B. Pritzker, can you believe that? I mean, I know about rich people running for office and spending a lot of their money. I don't know. This thing just staggers me. And maybe it's a non-issue. Hey, better that he's spending that money than mine. You know, I don't know how that impacts you. But if nothing else, you got to admit, that is a desperate amount of money. That is an insane amount of money. The job doesn't pay that well. I hope he knows that. We'll talk to Chris Kennedy in 20 minutes at 1:37. And we'll talk to him we'll talk to him at 1:37 in 20 minutes about that. We have spent way too much time on American Idol on this show talking about the behavior of Judge Katy Perry. So I thought we would do more of that today. Now, one of the things that's trending is the fact that she's been inappropriately sexual with some of the male candidates. We played for you a conversation she had with one of the young men who was about to sing, a guy named Trevor, earlier in the week. And she was talking about how hot he was, how good looking he was. Turns out he was not only good looking, but he was a good singer. He went through. But if you reverse the gender of the judge and the contestant, it doesn't pass the muster in 2018. And even in 1982, pick a date, it just felt a little, I don't know, what's the word here, kids? Awkward? Inappropriate, her sort of salivating over the hunkiness of this young man. And he seemed to like it on the one hand. He, you know, appreciated that this beautiful pop star was...
who's about to judge him and give him a ticket to Hollywood.
And she did. Okay, so she did it again. But in this case, it was a little bit different. Okay, here's cut one. This is Katy Perry with another kind of... gawky, lanky, I believe this young man is 17 years 19. Old or 19 years old, 19.
Okay. I'm a cashier at an electronics store, but I love it because sometimes there's cute girls and they're not going anywhere without saying hi.
You get a cute girl to say hi to you because they got to check out.
That has a racket already.
Wow.
Come on.
Have you kissed a girl and liked it?
No, I've never been in a relationship.
Really?
I can't kiss a girl without being in a relationship.
Come here, buddy.
Come here right now.
So he does not want to go up there. He's blushing. His knees buckle, literally. And maybe it's because he can't believe he's going to kiss Katy Perry. Or maybe it's because he doesn't want to kiss Katy Perry. Maybe he's gay and doesn't want to kiss any girl at all. But
and the whole reason the kissing got brought up is because that's the name of her song.
Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to lead to a whole exchange.
Well, do you think that thing sounded natural, or do you think that was scripted?
That was natural when they wrote it in the script.
They said, okay, here's a kid who's, we found out when we interviewed him beforehand that he's doesn't have a girlfriend and he's never been kissed. Oh my God, Katie has a song that says, I kissed a girl and I like it. Let's have this boy kiss Katie. High five, high five. Here's how that played out.
He didn't even make the smush sound.
Right, right, okay, okay.
Come
let me
on,
start
let's
over.
Get
let me
this.
Start over. Okay, okay.
So he goes in for the second smooch on the cheek.
He kisses her on the cheek, and she goes, that wasn't good enough. And then he goes, yeah, go ahead, Violetta.
He goes in for the second kiss on the cheek because yeah. she wanted a little bit more. And then she turns and kisses him on the mouth.
Here's what happened next.
Benjamin, sing for us now.
All right.
Might have been the kiss of Doyle.
Do you have any water by chance?
Why? What happened? You get nervous?
Yeah, so, he got nervous. You just stole his first kiss. Oh, my God.
So they continue to humiliate him and play with him and his discomfort. And he literally now is dry in the mouth. He's a wreck. So now he's just, no kidding. He wants water because he wants to compose himself. And they just double down on it. Eventually, he starts to sing, and halfway through the song, he sounds like this.
Oh, all these flames keep rising, make you stop, drop, and roll. Just a bottling up, that lightning is supernatural. Let him go, the ones trying to get in the door. Go where they all couldn't go. Floor, floor, up, floor, I know.
All right, Benjamin.
I just think you need to hone your craft a little more.
There you go.
Get a little better at singing. So I'm a no.
Benjamin, I really enjoyed meeting you today.
She just doesn't get it. You know, because then she says, but you know what? The competition is too strong for you. You're not ready. So she doesn't make fun of his singing, but the whole thing has made fun of this poor kid. I don't know. I don't know if you saw it, but I just thought it was in bad taste.
It's disgusting.
And I try not to sound like an old man, and I'm a Katy Perry fan.
I don't know if I am anymore. I honestly don't know if I can say that. This show is making me really question her just integrity, and she's weird.
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, she's acting weird. I know. I swear to God, she's read too much of her press. It's like, Katy, you're hot. We know. And you're wearing way too much makeup, whatever. But, I mean, my goodness, girl. What are you doing to these? Is this the shtick this year? I mean, one year it was Simon belittles people and Paula tries to butter him up. Is the shtick this year Katie comes on to the guys because they're playing that up?
Right, but also in this day and age when everything is scrutinized, it just seems like a really strange direction to take.
Oh, I completely agree.
And completely against the Time's Up movement.
I know.
That
this.
Katie probably thinks she's a supporter of.
Yeah, this doesn't do that. This does not do that.
And I don't know if the whole point is it's supposed to be a double standard, but it's just disheartening.
It's 1:27. We'll go into the newsroom in a second here. Let's just update you on some of those NCAA scores. LF, what are the NCAA scores?
In overtime, Oklahoma is beating Rhode Island by a score of 71-69. In the second half, Tennessee is beating Bright State by a score of 54-35.
I got that one.
In halftime, Gonzaga is beating UNC by a score of 32-23.
Got that.
In the first half, Penn is beating Kansas by a score of 19-11, John.
That's a 16-1, kids. Do that last score again. What was that? What was that last score?
In the first half, John, Penn is beating Kansas by a score of 19-11.
There's some people out east and they've got Penn because they just can't help it. They're from Penn. Donald Trump is from Penn. If he did brackets, Barack Obama still does his brackets. Come on, Mr. President, where's your brackets? Donald Trump, Ivanka, tell the president. Well, it's too late now. But people love it when celebrities do their brackets. If you're the president, you do the brackets, and they go, hey, you're just like me. You're watching the games. This is John Williams in the Allstate studios, the Allstate Showcase studios on Michigan Avenue. We'll keep you posted on those NCAA brackets and scores. Rhode Island looks like they're going to beat Oklahoma. I've got Rhode Island beating Duke in the second round, by the way. So how clever is this guy, huh?
You've got Rhode Island beating Duke?
Yeah.
No, they're up five. They're up five right now, 11 seconds left to go in the game.
Okay, so I'll probably survive this vote, and now I need him to beat Duke in the second round. Speaking of votes, Chris Kennedy is on a phone line. He is the Tribune-endorsed Democratic candidate running for governor in Illinois. He's running at the primary level right now, and he joins us again on WGN Radio. Chris, it's John. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me back on.
You got brackets working, or have you had time to fill them out?
I filled them out, but I haven't paid attention in the last 24 hours. So
what are you busy?
You're giving me a little update.
What are you busy?
Just a little bit.
What could be going on that's bigger than this?
Yeah.
Chris, here's what we want to do. We are playing the commercials. We did this for Danny Lipinski 2 days ago. We're all watching TV. We're all listening to the radio, and the campaigns are all running ads one against the other. They're sort of picking their spots. J.B. Pritzker is running some ads against you right now, and when I watch them, I go, wow, I wonder what Chris Kennedy would say about that. So if you don't mind, I just want to play parts of a couple of the ads that are taking you to...
He's lying.
Well, let's hear him piece by piece, and we'll let you respond. This is the... first part of an ad about education.
Five times Chris Kennedy voted to raise tuition as chair of the board at the University of Illinois. Kennedy's votes drove up the cost of college nearly 30% for Illinois students.
What about that, Chris Kennedy?
I mean, that's like the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. The notion that we drove down the cost of the rate of increase at the University of Illinois. A statement confirming that was put out by the now Republican-controlled Board of Trustees. And the rate of increase at the University of Illinois was held to the rate of increase for inflation. At the same time, we put $100 million into new scholarship funding. And I'm proud of the fact that half the kids that go to the University of Illinois now take advantage of their cost. So I think that ad is fundamentally misleading, and I think it robs us of the truth, of the subtlety and nuance necessary to govern something as large as the University of Illinois.
So five times tuition has gone up at the University of Illinois, and each time you approve that, but you're telling me that the rate of increase has been going down when you were voting for those tuition increases.
And the state of Illinois owed us $500 million in cash. I had to ask everybody who earns a paycheck from the University of Illinois to take an unpaid furlough so that we could make payroll. And they were desperate times. And yet, instead of increasing tuition like many of the peers in the Big Ten did, we held our increases to the rate of inflation. And the fact that J.B. Pritzker isn't explaining that means that he's willing to mislead the public as his campaign progresses. If someone is willing to lie to you to get a job, they're willing to lie to you to keep a job. You should never hire someone willing to lie to you.
Here's the second part of that ad.
At the same time, Chris Kennedy voted for huge pay raises for administrators and coaches. Pay raises for them, higher tuition for Illinois families.
What about those charges?
The tuition and the compensation for coaches have nothing to do with each other. Coach compensation is paid for by the athletic department, and the Board of Trustees hires a university president. The university president hires a chancellor. The chancellor hires a provost. The provost hires an athletic director, and the athletic director determines the salaries of the coaches. If the Pritzker campaign would like the university board to reach five levels down into the university and make decisions at that level, they're going to recreate that havoc that was created under George Ryan and Rod Blagojevich. And I recognize that Pritzker comes from the Blagojevich wing of the Democratic Party, but I don't think we should allow that sort of meddling to continue. I don't think we should use government as our own little piggy bank to enrich our friends, as he's suggesting perhaps we should.
I've understood the separation between tuition and the salaries for coaches, but it looks bad. Do you think that the that mechanism that you just described, at the end of the day, is in fact paying Illinois coaches too much in the public schools at the University of Illinois?
I think the University of Illinois is one of thousands of colleges in the United States, and we don't make the market, we don't set the market for compensation salary for competitive positions. Every coach, every administrator that we hire at the University of Illinois almost always has a current job, and we're trying to persuade them to leave the thing that they're doing now to come join the University of Illinois. I don't think we have the ability to make the market to determine what the pricing should be, and it's unfortunate, but it's misleading. It is not an accurate depiction of what occurred at the University of Illinois under my leadership. And I'm just telling you, someone who's willing to tell these lies does not deserve to be the governor of the state of Illinois.
There's a different ad where they are talking about your relationship with the current governor. This is part of that commercial.
Listen to what Chris Kennedy recently had to say about Bruce Rauner.
Bruce Rauner is trying to do what he thinks is best for the state of Illinois.
What?
His willingness to speak truth to power, to take on the powers that have been strangling our economy for decades in the state, is something that I think he should be applauded for.
The ad says, what kind of a Democrat is Chris Kennedy? What were you talking about when you were saying those nice things about Republican Bruce Rauner?
I don't know why J.B. Pritzker would call attention to more tapes. It's his voice on tapes that he should be most frightened by. But let's go into this commercial. If he were to play truthfully, if he actually told the truth and played the entire clip, you would understand that the question was about Bruce Rauner's criticism of the pay-to-play politics in the state of Illinois. Listen, I think Governor Rauner's the worst governor in America. I think he's the worst governor in the history of Illinois, including governors who went to jail. No one's done as much damage to the economy as Bruce Rauner has. Having said that, when Bruce Rauner criticizes the pay-to-play politics that J.B. Pritzker has emerged as the poster child of in this state, Bruce Rauner is not wrong. We shouldn't have elected officials. We shouldn't have billionaires trying to buy a appointment from Rod Blagojevich to be the state treasurer, the United States senator, or the attorney general. When Bruce Rauner speaks out against that system, he's not wrong.
Okay, but I'm going to play this clip one more time. Hit it, Elif.
Listen to what Chris Kennedy recently had to say about Bruce Rauner.
Bruce Rauner is trying to do what he thinks is best for the state of Illinois.
What?
His willingness to speak truth to power, to take on the powers that have been strangling our economy.
So were you talking about Mike Madigan in the state house, or what? Do you recall exactly what you were addressing there?
Sure. The great point is that you don't know because he hasn't fully informed you by playing the entire clip. Bruce, I was asked about Bruce Rauner's decision to ban elected officials from appearing before the Property Tax Appeals Board. I believe that was the executive order. And my belief is that what's happened in this state is a handful of people are getting rich on a system that's destroying our economy. Speaker Madigan took his position as Speaker of the House, and he parlayed it into head of the Democratic Party for the state of Illinois. From that position, he helped choose the head of the Democratic Party for Cook County, Joe Berrios. Joe Berrios, once elected as head of the Cook County Democratic Party, then slated himself as the Cook County assessor. Now, Mike Madigan, wearing a third hat as a property tax appeals lawyer, appeals property taxes from the big commercial properties to Joe Berrios, who he helped install in that job.
Yeah.
And he gets good results. That's what the insiders are doing. As a result, we don't have enough money to pay for our schools. And in the modern American economy, jobs follow highly educated young people. If we give the world highly educated young people, the world will give us its jobs. But 75% of the kids in the state go to a school that's so underfunded that they need remedial education. And that's because people like Mike Madigan are making money on the system. And I think it needs to end.
I got about 90 seconds left, and there's two other issues not related to the ads that your opponents are running, Chris. One is the governor vetoed a bill that would make it slightly more comprehensive. It's not a perfect bill, and it was only a single-issue bill, but it was about gun licensing in Illinois for gun shops. What was your take on his decision there?
I think he put everybody in the state of Illinois at risk. I think he had a chance to show great political courage, and instead he ducked it. The reason he vetoed that bill is because he faces a stiff primary election challenge on Tuesday from Jeannie Ives. And in order to ingratiate himself with the right-wing NRA bought-off range of the Republican Party, he vetoed that bill to ingratiate himself with them. He put the rest of us at risk to further his political career. There's nothing more craven than that.
Chris Kennedy, what about J.B. Pritzker's family, him and his brother, or maybe just him, parking money offshore? What's your analysis of that?
I think they're tax cheats, serial tax cheats.
Do you do anything like that, Chris? Do you do or
absolutely,
have you done anything like that?
No. Nope. The Kennedys are loyal to America. The American economy, American democracy made the Kennedy family. And we respect this country and what it's done for us enough to continue to support it. We did not offshore our money so that we didn't have to pay our fair share of taxes in the United States. And as a result of what the Pritzkers have done, all of us pay more taxes to the federal government because they paid less. All of us pay more taxes to the state of Illinois because they paid less. All of us pay more taxes in Cook County because J.B. Pritzker ripped out the toilets in his own house and got a sweetheart deal from Joe Berrios.
All right.
That's what's going on.
Chris, I appreciate your time. Drive safely, or whoever's driving, tell them to drive safely. We appreciate your time joining us this afternoon.
Okay, thank you so much.
They're playing basketball across the country. It's March Madness Thursday. It's the best day of the year. Elif, how are the brackets going?
Rhode Island beat Oklahoma by a score of 83-78.
Hold on. Rhode Island beat Oklahoma. Okay, good. Excuse me. Keep going.
Tennessee beat Wright State by a score of 73-47.
Keep going.
In the second half, Gonzaga is beating UNC by a score of 44-33.
Got it. That sounds about right.
In halftime, Kansas is beating Penn by a score of 33-26.
33-26. Boy, that's too bad. Penn was winning by about 9 in the first half of that game, like halfway through the first half. Now at the half, 33-26, as you might imagine, Kansas over Penn.
This is not looking good starting out.
Why? What's the matter?
My bracket.
Well, you're going to win the Kansas game, right? You've got them over Penn.
Yeah.
Did you miss the Rhode Island game? Did you have Oklahoma?
Yes, I missed that.
I probably told you to take the 10 over the 7. Those are fun ones to pick. And then what did you do?
And why aren't these in order? It's hard to keep track where it is on the list.
I'm sure you've got Gonzaga beating UNC.
Hold on.
Greensboro.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yes.
And then, so you're not doing so bad there, Violetta.
No?
You're going to get at least two of those.
Okay.
And the first round is carnage. You know, people do badly in the first round. You got.
That's when the true March Madness fans come out, huh?
Listen to you.
You lose
listen
them.
Listen to you talking March Madness. By the way, here's how we're doing the brackets at my house. My wife and I and my sons and my daughter-in-law and a friend, there's this little group of us that are doing the brackets. Instead of all of us throwing 10 bucks in, I had a brilliant idea. Again, I said, this time, let's have the loser of the brackets cook the dinner of the winner's choice. So if you win, you get your favorite meal cooked by the loser. Because what happens is when your brackets blow up, you have no more interest in the brackets anymore. At our house, everybody's still going to be interested because the loser doesn't want to have to cook dinner for everybody. And the loser has to cook the dinner of the winner's choice for everybody. So even if you're in the middle, you're kind of enjoying it because, you know, if I win, Griffin's going to have to cook a spaghetti dinner for me and everybody else.
How far do you have Butler going?
I've got them going a long way. I've got them beating
Purdue
and then St. Bonaventure. I'm the only guy in America with that kind of a bracket.
Where's St. Bonaventure?
It's out there. It's out there.
It's not in Philadelphia, too, is it?
I think it is.
So,
but I really don't know.
So you could have two Indiana schools playing.
Right. Yeah, Butler and...
Oh, no, you've got St. Bonaventure playing...
Yeah, Butler.
Oh, that's interesting.
I've got... It's disastrous is what it is.
Interesting is...
a kind way to put it. But, you know, your heart gets in the way of your head on these things.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
All right, let's do this. A lot of ground to cover, and you've heard Steve cover some of it there. It's 210 on WGN. I'm in the Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It says Allstate all around here, and we appreciate that. We appreciate your listening. Until 3, I'm on Saturdays from 10 to noon, 10 to 11:30 this week. We'll actually have some Blackhawks hockey. Wouldn't it have been fun if we had Northwestern in the tournament? We do have Loyola in these parts. And Steve said that game is at, I think, 2:10 this afternoon. 2:10, they'll take on Miami.
That's right,
Florida.
Now.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, well, they'll just be tipping off. Elif will have to keep track of that game for us. Don't turn your radio off. Just keep listening to WGN. Watch this. Ed Shamelia is the coordinator of the National Marijuana Initiative. He just joined us in studio. We were talking off the air about basketball because this guy, as you'll soon discern, is from Kentucky, and he's not real sure that that five is going to get past number 12, Davidson. That's not why I brought you in here, Ed, but just give me 20 seconds of smart talk about Kentucky basketball. What's got you worried?
The fact that they're inconsistent this year. They say it's a freshman team, but they're very young, but they should be past that. I just don't know which team's going to show up. And Davidson has the ability to hit the three. They don't typically guard a team that hits the three very well.
Yeah.
So I'm concerned that this team could give them some trouble. But now if the team that shows up in the SEC tournament, they should handily take care of Davidson.
They did well at the SEC?
They did. They won the SEC tourney,
yeah.
And they played very good ball.
Ed,
so.
I'll tell you, this is my problem with my Butler Bulldogs. You don't know what team's going to show up. Butler beat number one Ohio State. Butler beat then number one Villanova. Butler had beat Xavier, which is a one seed in the tournament. And then Butler is capable of losing an inter-squad scrimmage. So you just don't know what you're going to. And we were terrible in our last game in the tournament against X. So I'm worried about this team. But I've got them beating Arkansas. And then I've got them beating Purdue.
Oh,
let's not talk about that. We asked you to come here because the DuPage County Health Department's prevention leadership team, that's a lot, but it's a bunch of folks in DuPage County who are vested in health care and law enforcement, and they're trying to crack down or contain problems with abuse of drugs, alcohol, tobacco, etc. Particularly marijuana is on people's radar. In this state, we are going to vote in November on the following. This will appear on the ballot. Do you support the legislation of possession and use of marijuana by persons who are at least 21 years of age, subject to regulation and taxation that is similar to the regulation and taxation of tobacco and alcohol? So the question is saying, look, we'll tax it like booze and cigarettes. You will have to be 21 and the state will make money on it. I don't know if that's a leading ballot initiative, but that's the non-binding question that we'll vote yes or no on. You're probably seeing this across the country, aren't you?
Yes, we are. And as a matter of fact, we currently have 8 states that have recreationalized this drug, which that referendum seeks to gauge the support to do just that. 28 states that have medicalized this drug in some shape, form, or fashion.
Including Illinois. What's your background?
I am in my 39th year in law enforcement. I spent 30 years with the Kentucky State Police, 4 years with the Appalachia HIDA, and getting on almost 5 years now as the national coordinator for the National Marijuana Initiative. It is one of the 3 national initiatives that support our 32 HIDAs across the country.
What's a HIDA?
A HIDA is a high-intensity drug trafficking area, of which you have one here in Chicago, one of our largest HIDAs. It is a unique vessel that brings together a partnership between federal, state, and local law enforcement to address mid and upper level drug trafficking organizations in the area.
I guess I'm not surprised that Chicago would be that. We're a big city, but it seems like we have a particular problem along 290, along the Eisenhower. I just know too many stories about people getting on the Ike and getting off somewhere around Austin or one of those exits, and right there at the exit ramp, they buy their drugs, they get back on the highway, and away they go.
And that's typical of what we're seeing across the country. You know, you look at the substance abuse problem that this country currently has. And I come from, you know, I'm from Kentucky, and we have been in the middle of the opioid epidemic since the mid-90s. And it started out with pharmaceutical-grade opioids. Then we started cracking down on pill mills. And then that morphed into a full-blown heroin and issue that we're currently dealing with. We're losing about 80 Kentuckians a month to opioid overdose deaths.
Are you mad at the legitimate manufacturers and use of that? Was it over-prescribed?
Well, I think that was part of the problem, over-prescribing of that at the...
They're pushing too many of the pills all the way down the chain.
They were. That was one of the issues, the lack of any kind of regulatory scheme with respect to the pharmaceutical industry. But now what we're facing is an illicit drug trafficking organizations that have stepped in once we fixed that mechanism, and they were already posturing themselves to bring in heroin.
And how does that relate to marijuana?
Well, you know, what you're seeing, what we have seen across the country, you know, like I said, 28 states that have medicalized this drug outside of the auspices of the FDA, either through a legislative intent or ballot referendum, and 8 states that have recreationalized it.
You don't think we should make marijuana legal for medical purposes?
No. I say we need, what I wholly subscribe to is with any substance, we actually need to investigate through the proper channels any medicinal value in any substance, including this one.
You think that's still in play? That issue's not been resolved?
That issue has not been resolved because right now there is absolutely no scientific data to support crude marijuana as medicine.
Crude marijuana.
Right.
Are we talking about the same thing here? I can tell you stories of people who have received medical marijuana prescriptions and it has changed their life for the better.
Well, first of all, you can't obtain a prescription. It's a recommendation.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. And, you know, and again, the science does not support what they are claiming.
Well, then what do you tell
them? We got to have more research, first and foremost.
What do you say to those people, though, whose seizures have gone away or whose pain's been diminished?
Well, you know, I can't answer that. All I can say is what the science is telling us about this.
So then I can imagine what you say about recreational use of marijuana.
Well, here's what we're looking at with recreationally. And here are some of the things you need to be concerned about. What we have seen time after time, 8 times repeated itself. Here's what I can tell you is going to happen. Youth usage rates are going to go up. The fastest growing segment of regular marijuana users in this country is our young people. And I'm talking about 18 to 30 years of age. And why this is so important is because this is the group that's most vulnerable to the consequences of THC usage, the developing brain. Their brain's not fully developed yet. The science on the harms of marijuana have been done in the 12 to 15% range. What we are seeing today, and most people do not realize when they talk about marijuana, everybody's perception about that drug, you see the old Cheech and Chong movies in the 70s, and the marijuana of the 70s, if this was still the same drug, I really wouldn't be wasting your time because it was a relatively benign drug. Because we're talking about potency levels, THC. Of the 100-plus cannabinoids, the only one anybody's ever heard of is delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol. And that is the only substance in this drug that gets you high. And we're looking at potency that was in a smokable product, in the crude product. We're looking at potencies between 0.5% and 2%. Hash oil, we're looking at 6% to 8%. What we have seen since Colorado recreationalized this is smokable product now, the crude marijuana now exceeds 35%. Hmm. But that's not what's driving the sales in these states. What's driving the sales in these states are concentrates, oils, edibles, vaping. That's what's driving our sales.
Do you suppose, though, what's also driving this issue is not any legislator's desire to let people get high?
No, it's
not. But we'd clean out some of the jails. Instead of putting people in for infractions that other folks might judge are petty compared to, say, opioids or other crimes. I mean, let's not jail people for a drug that's not much worse than alcohol.
Well, in some respects it is, but that's a whole different discussion. But let's talk about, you're talking, bringing up social justice here, or for lack of a better word, social injustice. When you look at statistics in the states that have recreationalized this, overall, with the exception of 2 categories, nobody's being arrested anymore, with the exception of minorities. In the states that have stringent marijuana laws, those arrests are actually down 16%. In the states that have these laws that allow recreational use, it's almost a 50% reduction in the number of arrests for individuals in possession, manufacturing, are trafficking this substance. So overall, we're seeing numbers of arrests going down, with the exception of two categories, and that's our minority populations. Our African-Americans and Latinos are being arrested disproportionately in these states as opposed to whites.
In, say, Colorado or Oregon.
In, say, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, we are in the—you want to know why? If you look at where these dispensaries are placed, they are not in your affluent communities. There is a disproportionate number of dispensaries in the communities of color and in communities—
Why do you suppose that is? Why are they putting them there?
Well, basically, they're just following the alcohol and tobacco model. It's been very successful. If you look at alcohol and tobacco industry, and you look at the—and I go from my state. I can speak for my state. You know, we look at Kentucky as a poor state. Of the 50 poorest counties, we comprise 28% of the 50 poorest counties, 40% of the top 10 counties. And you go to these counties, and you'll see a disproportionate amount of tobacco and alcohol stores. So the model worked for that industry, and it is working for these communities. Don't have the political wherewithal to keep them out like the affluent communities.
I was just going to say, maybe if you've legalized recreational marijuana, and whenever you see the stories on TV, they go into the shop and it's kind of comical. The stories always have a pun in the headline. I was literally looking today and I thought, here in Illinois, they'll say it's high on the agenda of the, yes, you know, and there's this wink about it all. And to be honest with you, if I were you, I'd be a little offended by that, because I think it's not treating it seriously or neutrally when we write about it.
No, we're not.
When we talk about it. But my point is, though, that usually it's an interior story. We don't see where these stores are
set.
Don't. And you're telling me they're not in the nicer neighborhoods.
No, they're not. And you go to Denver, go to Portland, go to Boulder, go to Seattle, and look. And what we're seeing with looking at census data based on income thresholds, regardless of color, and comparing it to zip code data where these dispensaries are located, and there is a disproportionate number.
Okay,
located.
Hold on. Ed Chimelia is here. He is the coordinator of the National Marijuana Initiative. Some healthcare and law enforcement professionals in DuPage County have brought him in to talk a little bit about the possibility of recreational marijuana in Illinois, as well as other addictive issues and the enforcement of them. Ed, just give me some advice that you have for Illinois. You're here as a courtesy to DuPage County talking about enforcement of these kinds of issues. Ed Chimelia is in our studio. He's the coordinator of the National Marijuana Initiative. But we're going down the path of voting for legalizing marijuana in Cook County and or in the state of Illinois. What do you want to say to us about
that?
Well,
I think what you need to do is take a look at the issues that we are seeing in these other states that have already done this. And be cognizant of the fact that if you should do this, then you need to look at your youth usage rates in all three categories, 12 to 17, 18, 25, 26 and above. I can guarantee you they will go up. How do you deal with that to make sure that this group is not getting what they're not supposed to get, and that is marijuana? So you're going to see an increase in youth usage rates. Another thing you need to consider is driving under the influence of marijuana is going through the roof. 85% increase in the numbers of drivers tested positive in Colorado for driving under the influence of marijuana. We're seeing that in Washington and Oregon. The states that have done this, DUIDs, where marijuana is the principal drug, you're going to see that. How do you deal with that? Do your departments have enough drug recognition experts to deal with that? Because we don't have the science to detect cannabis impairment like we do alcohol impairment.
Is it possible that I would test positive for it but not be impaired?
Yes, because it depends on how you're tested. Because everybody that ingests marijuana, one of the metabolites is carboxy THC, and it can remain in your system up to 30 days.
Right, so I might have THC in my system, test positive, and in fact, I might not be an impaired.
That's exactly right. The accurate indicator is Delta 9 THC, which you have to do from blood. There's the big quandary right.
That's
there. The individual that would develop the device to help for roadside detection with cannabis will be a billionaire overnight. Some of the other things you need to look at is how's it going to impact your businesses? Because it is happening in these states. Look at treatment. Look at school performance issues and look at the impact in the school systems and look at mental health issues, because what we are seeing is issues around mental health. Those are just some of the things. Not to mention that you're going to make a lot of tax revenue from it, depending on how you decide to tax it. There are some upsides to this. It's a job creator, tax revenue generator. So there's some upsides to it, but counterbalance that with the fact that we really don't know what this drug is costing this country as a society, like we can articulate with alcohol and tobacco with a great deal of assurance. The data is just not there. And that's the dilemma right here, is we don't have the volume of research to make definitive causation analysis about this drug as we do with alcohol and tobacco. And we're probably going to be 5 to 10 years away from doing so.
Ed Chimelia is the coordinator of the National Marijuana Initiative. DuPage County Health Department brought him into town. Next time you're in town, come into my studio again.
Thank you.
We did not yesterday talk about the weird stories these days of dogs or puppies on airplanes and the problems that airlines have been having with them. In fact, we're turning it into a movie.
Enough is enough! I have had it with these
gosh darn puppies
on this
gosh darn plane.
Everybody strap in.
I feel like I've seen that before.
Tell me which version of that you like better. So that there's one way to do it, and it's like that. Here's, Elif, let's play the other version of the movie trailer for puppies on an air, puppies on planes.
Enough is enough. I have had it with these
gosh darn puppies
on this
gosh darn plane.
Everybody strap in.
I think I like the first one better. Either way, what a great movie. United Airlines is facing backlash over the puppy that died in flight after a cabin attendant ordered it stowed in the overhead bin. It was a French bulldog, which have trouble breathing as it is. Violators will face significant fines. Pets are family, said U.S. Senator John Kennedy. In his letter to the airline, he said United's pattern of animal deaths and injuries is inexcusable. The actions came after a United flight attendant insisted that the bulldog's owner put her pet, which was in a dog carrier case, in an overhead storage bin during a 3.5-hour flight from Houston to New York. The owner's 11-year-old daughter, Sophia, in an interview with CBS, recounted her actions when the attendant ordered that the dog carrier case be placed in the overhead bin. I was like, it's a dog, it's a dog, he can't breathe in there. And she said that they said it doesn't matter. The family told CBS they'd heard the puppy barking for 2 hours during the flight before he went silent. The family said they were unable to check on the dog because of turbulence and they had to stay seated. There's so many wrong things about this story. I cannot believe that the airline attendant, knowing that's a live dog in that case, would tell you to put it in the overhead bin. If I was a passenger witnessing this and it wasn't my dog, I would speak up and say, no, that's crazy. The dog doesn't go in the overhead bin. I mean, I don't even understand how the plane takes off. There should be an insurrection if that happens. People go, no, the dog doesn't go in the overhead bin. I don't know how I feel about dogs going on planes to begin with, unless it's a comfort dog. But if you're bringing your dog on the plane, you know, the only dogs that should be on planes are comfort dogs. If you have a small dog or you want to travel with your dog, or your dog's no problem, you do not get to bring your dog on a plane. Planes are for human beings, and we're having enough trouble with them as it is. So you do not get to bring any animals on planes unless that animal has been certified and you are too. But then how the hell does that thing get in there? I just don't understand that.
Or stay in there. Like, I would have put it in, and then when the lady walked away, I would have got my puppy.
I absolutely. And I am... Like, remember when those United Airline attendants, or who was it that was dragging that poor doctor down the aisle? Was it the airline attendants or the police?
It was the airline police.
Police. Yeah, that was on the ground. They come on and they drag the guy screaming off. And I have, from the beginning to this day, I completely fault the guy. If you are being dragged down an aisle on an airplane, that's your fault. That is your problem, Jack. You weren't cooperating. But I am for a little sort of insubordination here with the pet because they didn't try and put the doctor in the overhead compartment. And I think he would have fit, by the way. You do not put animals up there. This is insane. I just don't understand it.
I don't even put my cat in my bathroom with the door closed when I'm trying to sleep and he's annoying all night because the radiator is too hot in there.
You're worried that the cat will get hurt somehow.
Yeah.
You're especially protective of your cat.
I am.
How is your cat bothering you that the cat would keep you awake at night?
Well, because cats are nocturnal and they run around in the middle of the night. And
what
play.
So you're hearing the cat?
Yeah.
Is he meowing?
No, he's actually silent. Well,
and
he
that's making
use his
voice.
And he's otherwise he just runs around. He runs amok, and I'm trying to sleep, and I hear him his feet going around the apartment.
But they're cat paws. It's this cat is noisy enough that it's keeping you awake.
Imagine all night.
Oh. Plus, you're worried that he's going to knock something over or get into something, right?
Yeah.
The Department of Transportation is looking into the circumstances surrounding the recent death of a pet on board a United Airlines flight. The department is in contact with the Department of Agriculture that oversees these things. Federal Aviation Administration is looking into it. United Airlines said that despite the puppy owners telling the flight attendant that there was a dog in the carrying case, the flight attendant either did not hear or did not understand. Maybe there was a language barrier. But it says here, the airline says that they did not knowingly place the dog in the overhead bin. United said it had contacted or concluded its investigation into the matter. The $120 fee that they paid for the dog is going to be refunded. Oh, more than that's going to be refunded, Jack. Let's go to the jury room. Violetta, Elif, Steve, how much do you return to the family for the wrongful death of this pet? How much does the family get? Violetta, go.
$10,000.
$10,000. Kevin, how much money are you giving to the family for the wrongful death of their pet in the overhead?
$500,000.
$500,000. $10,000, $500,000. Steve?
I would send I'd go to Hallmark. I'd get a sympathy card.
And a good one. A thoughtful one.
A glittery one.
Maybe with a puppy on it?
Maybe not.
I wouldn't do that.
Just right. He had a good run.
And then I would offer free tickets.
Free tickets.
To just anywhere one? In the world or limited? Like if they offer tickets to Tulsa or something. Like that. Come on. You know something more than that. Yeah, Tulsa.
I'd be generous with my tickets, but...
Yeah, I think it always looks bad when, you know, you have a problem with the cruise ship or the airline or whatever, and then the compensation is more of the same.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, no, I don't want to go on your plane.
But now that it's all in the public eye, don't you think all people are going to get more now from companies? Now that social media and everyone's going to shame the company forever about this, that they're going to dish out a little bit more dough? Or the people are going to ask for more?
I'm trying to figure out how this will go.
Weren't there some people saying that this could threaten the CEO's job?
Oh, dear God.
And
I'm sorry. Airplanes are for people. And look, I got two dogs, and I'll be sad when they die. I've been devastated before. It sounds like I don't care about these animals. But I'm just arguing for a little perspective here, kids.
People and emotional support peacocks. That's it.
So how much you giving them, John?
Yeah, I'm wondering about that because $10,000, $500,000. If I concluded that the airline attendant knew that that was a dog in there and insisted that that happen, I'm going to give the family $7,000.
See, I was guessing what United's going to eventually give. Like, if you're asking me personally what I would give them, it's different than the number I initially gave you.
Give me your spread. You were at $500,000.
I'd still say, okay, I would say like $20,000 and like a ton of free tickets.
Well, they can't give more than they gave to the guy they beat up.
How much did they give him?
I don't remember, but that would be
bad
for him.
Yeah. He was dragged out?
Right. I guarantee you, I have a lot more compassion for the dog and the family in this case than the doctor, but... I'm in a weird place about that one. Elif says, take line three. Line three, that is Christina. You're on WGN. Christina.
Hi.
You're on the air. What do you want to say?
Well, my daughter, for the very first time, was taking a flight. It was a Virgin America flight from Chicago to San Fran. And as she was waiting in the waiting area, there was a golden retriever, huge golden retriever. The person with the golden retriever was in young 20s, and my daughter called us up panicked because she felt like her throat felt weird, her lips felt weird, and she went to the Virgin America people, and they said, we're sorry, we can't do anything for you, dog takes precedence. So she called us back, and she really was panicked because she didn't feel good. And I said, isn't there like an adult in the waiting area that that could help you maybe? So Kate found someone, and this mother got on the phone with me, and she said, your daughter is having a severe allergic reaction, and you need to get back to the airport. Her throat's starting to close up. And at that point, Virgin America started boarding people, and a gentleman was boarding the airplane, and he yelled to my daughter and this other woman, get her to the medical center at O'Hare immediately. And he went on the plane, and this woman then went to the desk and said, where is the medical center in O'Hare? Virgin America had no idea. By that time, my husband and I had returned to the airport. They dropped my daughter off in the luggage area where we picked her up. We took her to the hospital. She was at the hospital for well over half a day. She had to have IV drips and, EpiPens and all that. And she was affected for about 3 days after that.
Did you know that your daughter was allergic to pet hair?
She is allergic to dogs. She's allergic to dogs. And this, especially things like golden retrievers, you know, long-haired dogs. And it was a, you know.
A buddy of mine is, now that you mention it. So I'm just wondering, if for that population, when they're trying to board an airplane and the dog is trying to board the airplane, then it's tough luck for you. You better not get on that airplane.
It's tough luck for us. And they told my daughter they could put her in the, you know, in the back of the plane. But, you know, it's recirculated air.
Oh, no. I'm not getting on that plane. That's a bad idea. I don't even want to get on a plane with a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah,
you're all breathing the same air.
What? They also won't tell you until you get to the airport whether there's a dog on the airplane. And so, you know, here you can order vegan meals and all these different meals, and yet they can't tell you whether there's a dog on the airplane. So with our daughter, you know, if we go to the airport and there's a dog, we just have to wait for the next available plane. And if that next available plane has a dog, then we have to wait for the next available
okay,
plane.
Okay, okay. Listen, I'm hearing you and I'm feeling your pain, Christina. If it's a service dog, then what we're saying is it's not the dog getting on board. It's that person getting on board who has to have the dog with them. And in that case, I don't know to whom we should defer, but it sure doesn't sound to me like they've thought this through. That's really messed up.
Here's the thing. There are people that really, really have to have their dog with them.
Yeah.
And 100%, someone like my daughter would say, you know what? I understand that person needs the dog.
But they need to put that on the ticketing information. When you're signing up, you need to know that a dog will be on that plane, and then you don't buy that ticket.
I agree. But if it's like a comfort dog, and we know that you can go online and for $35, you know, you can get certified.
Yeah.
So in that case, why should my daughter or any other paying person, why does a dog take precedent over my daughter?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm out of time here, Christina. This is an amazing story. I'm sorry y'all went through it, and you've at least made us think about it. Thank you for your story, and my best to y'all.
Thanks for listening.
Have a good day. It's 2:52. How are your teams doing? There's amazing news out today, too. All of that next on WGN. Hey, Elif, give us an update on the scores, please.
Gonzaga beat UNCG 68-64. In the second half, Kansas is beating Penn by a score of 73-57. In the halftime, Duke is beating Iona by a score of 53-39. In the first half, Loyola is beating Miami by a score of 24-20.
24-20.
Did you see how the tournament started, John?
With
Rhode Island, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Overtime to start the tourney. That's
Don't
what I
you
like
love
to
that?
See.
That's what you love.
Even if you didn't hit on that one, come on. That's how you start the tournament off.
And
that was fun.
And I did. I got Rhode Island.
There you go.
You don't have to rub it in.
I got Tennessee.
Okay.
I've got Duke winning, though, so don't worry. I'm not so damn clever. No, I've got Duke losing.
Oh, that was your upset pick special?
I've got a 15-2, and I've got Duke losing. It's not going to happen.
Man, Gonzaga was...
Zags made it interesting, didn't they? And for a while there, Kansas was losing soundly to Penn. But you knew that was going to turn. This is Anna DeVlantis. Hi, Anna.
Hi there, John. You ready for your big day tomorrow? The dancing shoes are all... I don't know. What do you do to suede shoes? You
blue suede them. Shoes.
Blue suede shoes, you just... Puppy. What do? Brush them up, make sure they look good?
I have a blue suede brush.
Oh.
I have a suede brush. I'm worried about the bottom of them. They're a little coarse, and I need to slide in some spots on the dance floor. So hopefully I'll be able to manage it. But listen, let's not talk about it, or I'll start to think about it.
You don't want to think. Just dance.
And if I think about it, then I don't dance well.
That's a good point. You just got to let it go.
I don't have that bone.
Put some baby oil if you need a slide.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
what else are you guys? I'm not talking about this.
Okay, we're not talking about that, but we are talking about Michael Steele, the former head of the RNC, who's going to be by to talk all things Washington. With Lester Holt, you've heard of him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The anchor of the NBC Nightly News. He's going to be with us, as he is every week, talking about the latest, and then the latest on that bridge collapse, too. Of course, we're going to be following those details.
God, I heard about that. I got friends in Minnesota, and you know they know about bridge collapses up there. And it was this is a pedestrian bridge, but it's like a pancake. This thing just went plop.
Well, it's 1 week old.
Yeah, it just finished
was
it.
Well, it's not even finished. There were no pedestrians on it, but it was wasn't supposed to open until next year. But it was in position, and it just went.
How sad!
Yeah. Kaplop!
Right really, on top really of bad. Cars, trapped underneath.
You can't believe it.
Exactly,
guys. I'm out of your way. I wish you a really good show. You'll keep folks posted on the Loyola score, maybe.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Go Ramblers.
I got them in my. I'm going to keep posted on everything that's in my bracket.
Right.
Yes.
That's what we'll do. We'll keep you posted on all of our wins.
Yeah. Exactly right. All right.